21, José Balmaceda, Culture and Identity Questions.
Alright. So we left off before talking about sports. We're done with sports now. And now more than anything, I want to know about any contact you had with United States culture when you were growing up, whether it's music, sports, or other aspects of the culture, just growing up. What do you remember about that?
Well, really, from the time I started my education, as I said, I studied with Mr. Connor at the Escuela Modelo Tumba. It was all in English. So, since we spoke English at home, my music was always something from the United States. That's what I heard on the radio. There was an American radio in Panama, SCN. Can't remember what it was in those days from way back. But I listened to a lot of English music, especially with Nat King Cole, and you know that he's one of my favorites, you know, and Frank Sinatra, and that was my favorite music in those days, soft, ballads, romantic, and so forth. As far as culture is concerned, we had a great influence from the Canal Zone. Although I studied with Mr. Connor, who was Jamaican, you know, and we learned our English out of a English reader. It was called the Royal Reader. But anyways, everything around us was influenced by the Americans in the Canal Zone. Especially as far as I can remember, when I was a kid, my father worked for the Americans as a cabinet maker. And we would have to go over to the canal. I was always scared of going into the canal area. But we had the privilege of buying at the commissaries. There was a $5 book with coupons, you know, that they just cut it out. How much? $5 we could eat for about a week in those days at the commissary. And then being over there, you know, we would take a glimpse at the... In Colón, there was a stadium over in Cristobal where the Americans played their baseball. You know, and I'd be looking over always at the games over there since I was so interested in sports and so forth. And talking about sports, not to speak then of the baseball, Major League Baseball, it was the thing, and it still is in Colón and in Panama. So we were great baseball fans from our earlier age, maybe 8, 9, 10 years old. I was into baseball. That's how I got into scoring baseball. I would write to different parts of the United States so they could send me copies of the baseball rules. You know, and I was very much involved in sports and in music. And as far as culture, I would say yes. Yes. We did a lot of things from movies. Because most of the pictures that I would go see in Colón were American movies. Other people would favor, like say, the Mexican music with the mariachis and so forth. But in my early age, I would prefer, and I still do prefer, to go see an American movie. You know, because we just love these musical pictures and so forth, you know, Hello Dolly and so forth. We just love that. I say we, I mean my brothers and myself. That we were brought up within that environment.
You remember... you mentioned the name of an American movie. Can you just mention the name of an American movie?
Gone with the Wind. That was one of the classics, you know. I am not too good at remembering things, you know. I enjoy it at the moment.
Okay. Alright, now, let's talk a little bit about West Indian, so to speak. What's the first word that comes to mind when someone says the word West Indian?
Friend.
Right.
That's the first thing that comes to my mind, friend.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because I learned to be friendly with West Indians. You know, just as a coincidence, I am into Facebook. I don't know if this story is an old story up to date. In my past stories, I've said that I was born by a midwife on a building in 12th Street and Bolivar Avenue in Cologne. Everybody in the building was black with English names. The only Spanish was Balmaceda. But as far as I can remember, I was maybe 2, 3, 4 years old. There was a lady that was very friendly with my mother and my father, more with my mother, because my father was always out working, you know. Her name was Daisy Davis. You know, and we remember her as a part of our family, because she helped bring us up, you know. Just like we had another lady, I don't want to call her maid, but she would come out and cook for us, Miss Ruth, you know. Well, Daisy was a great friend with my mother. My mother died and she helped with the family. She helped, then she died. And her daughter, Loretta, left for the States. She lives in New York. I don't communicate with her. Just once in a while I'll hear from her, because my brother, he goes to New York every year. And he stays at her place some of the times, you know. And then my sister, who's in Puerto Rico, she was actually attended by Daisy. But everybody speaks about Daisy and Loretta, her daughter. Why I'm giving you this story is because last week somebody showed up on my Facebook inviting me to be her friend. So her name is Janet, I think, Watley. So I says, Watley, hey, that's the name of my bass player for the trio. So I wonder if she's related to this Wattler, I'm sorry, Wattler. Instead of Walter, it's T-L. And I went into her list of friends. Because you have 6 friends in common. Wow, I don't know if you know about Facebook. Okay, I went into her list of common friends with me. Then I see my sister, her children, and a couple other people from the family, you know. So I wrote her and say, who are you? You know, I know a friend of mine in Cologne name is Wattler, just like yours, you know, is a surname. And she answered me back yesterday morning. And she says, Chichi. Anybody tells me Chichi because they know me from a kid. And I am Loretta's daughter. How about that? You know, so we were communicating. I was so excited. I wrote her back and say, hey, it's great to at least, you know, get in touch with you people, because I don't go to New York. My brother does. Chachita's been over there. My sister has been over there a couple of times, you know. But I don't like the traveling, as I said before, and moving around. And we just don't talk on telephone and so forth. But these are people that's part of our family, you know. And then she looks so pretty, you know. And that picture, I say, who are you? Wow. Well, anyways, this is what you asked me about, what I remember. That's what I was brought up with, you know, with nice, caring people. Friendly people. That I want to even say that I feel that they're part of my family, you know. And I just love these people because that's where I learned to be friendly. I think I'm friendly. I try to be. And that's where they taught me, you know. Just like Jesus would say, love others as I love you, you know. I think that could answer my question, your question then about what I remember when you talk about West Indian, you know. And I think you know that 90% of my friends are West Indian descent.
Now, if I were to ask you, what qualities and cultural behaviors do you associate with West Indianness? I know friendliness is definitely a very important one.
Yes.
What additional ones? You could just throw out a few other qualities.
Qualities of what?
Of West Indianness or West Indian behavior or West Indian aspects in addition to friendliness. Yes.
That's a tough question to answer because I think the people that I knew growing up of West Indian nature, whatever, whether they were from West Indies or descendants of West Indians, the quality of the people have changed tremendously because if I talk about what you were asking me to mention, you know, about good things or bad things, whatever. It is so different nowadays because I think the people before were more honest, you know. I don't know, maybe it's the political changes in Panama or in the world, you know, that's really changed the nature of people. But I think people before, that the people I grew up with they gave good examples, you know. Right now you can see that I am working along with a friend of mine, Esteban Lang, on writing about history of my hometown, Colón. And if you look, really look, we're not looking at color, but if you really get into the information that we're gathering, you will find that, okay, just say more than half of the people among these Colón people that really excelled in their different sports or music or whatever were black people. But nowadays, when they talk about, especially Colón, I'm talking about Colón, a black person, you're thinking of a thief. You know, you're thinking of somebody that's in jail. You're thinking of somebody that's not a good example for the public, you know, for the kids. So I wouldn't even dare, because I don't live in Colón right now, and but what's been published, unfortunately, is the worst that they can publish about Colón. But I know we have some good people in Colón. Huh? So I wouldn't dare generalize, just say in general how people are, or what kind of qualities, but I do say for the people that I came up with, they were good people, very good people.
Okay. The next question, do you believe, and this is again related to something you were just talking, do you believe that people in Panama view or treat you differently because of not your race or your West Indian descent, but rather, as you were saying, the way that you speak
yes.
English.
Yes. Yes. I mean, the question is so perfect because they look at me, you know, I am brown skin, I am Balmaceda, Jose Casimiro Balmaceda, you know, everything Latin about it. But I remember years ago, I would meet up with my English-speaking friends and speaking this Creole, whatever you call it, English. Hey, Wapin, let's go. You go have a shop tomorrow. You know, faces would turn, heads would turn, and they look at you in a very, very, what can I say? What kind of adjective can fit in there? You know, like disgusting. You know, and I don't know why. I really can't pinpoint it, because as I said, in Colón, people, the black people, and I will include myself, my family, because I worked at the Canal Zone, my father worked at the Canal Zone, my brother worked at the Canal Zone, my sister worked in the Canal area, and we all worked over there. You know, people will look over and say, hey, those are the money people, you know, because you work in the Canal Zone, and they will have respect for you because they think that you have money in your pocket. You know, money talks a lot. But now there is no Canal Zone. There are no black people working in the Canal area. And if they're working there, it's because everybody has a degree or whatever, you know. But you don't find normal people, all educated people work in the Canal Zone, black people. And they're been replaced a lot by whites. And then if we're talking about, I don't want to get into racism, I don't want to get into, but there was an incident that I remember well. When I worked first for the Panamanian government, when I was studying architecture, I was a draftsman. And then I got bumped because of political reasons. It was IVU, the Housing Institute of Panama. Then I put my papers into the Canal Zone. I never wanted to go work over there because of I always heard about this gold roll, silver roll. And my brother was a fireman over here. He said, Shishi, come on over here. This is where you can make the money. Okay, I started to fill papers out. I put in about 20 jobs because I did a lot of things, you know, that I thought I could do in a job in the Canal Zone and also in Panama. And then I saw tourist guide, you know, and I can do that because I know Colón. And I can always learn the area from the Canal Zone. I was always scared of going into the Canal Zone, but a tourist, okay. I can learn about the Panama Canal. As a matter of fact, I did know some of it by reading, you know. So I can be a good tourist guide. It was a grade 4. So I went and I put in my papers, and my average was 90-something. I think it was 98 or whatever. So I went for the interview. And they told me, we already selected somebody. They invited me to an interview, and yet when I went, I remember they told me, no, we already selected somebody. His name was Azcárraga. Azcárraga is a big name in Panama related to people with money. That's when I started to figure, they're getting into it, you know. And I said, I don't want to be too profound on this, but it started many years ago, in my opinion. You know, let's move some people out and put some of our people in, because the Torrijos was already working on the treaty, and Panama was going to be ours. But in my thought, I don't think they were going to left it in the hands of too many black people. That was my opinion. Fortunately, I did get a job afterwards as a draftsman, and I worked my way up. I worked my way up, and probably because we did have some locals as chiefs also. Although I had an encounter with a couple of them, Panamanians, you know, that when they got to be boss, they were bossy. But my help was really from Americans. From Caucasian Americans, you know. I also remember the time when I did my drafting work. This gentleman, an elderly person, he was in his 70s, chief engineer. He came in and, who is Balmaceda? I said, that's me. And he had a drawing, you know. And he said, you did this? I said, yeah. I like your work. You're good. You could make a good inspector, you know. And because of him, I got to be an inspector, you know. And as I said, at that time that I met afterwards, I met Panamanians as chiefs. I had a problem with one of them. But we got together, and we made Panama look good. And I'm talking about the Department of Engineering of the Army. That's where I work. As a matter of fact, I work with your father also. Yeah. But what was the question again?
How have people treated you differently because of the way you speak?
Oh, yes. And I think it still happens. But on the contrary, you know, it's getting better in a sense of, since English is demanding now in Panama, everybody has to learn English. Now they're looking at us as, hey, I need this guy's help. But not because they're admiring local Panamanians speaking English. If an American comes in and speaks English, he's a great guy. But if a guy from Cologne comes in and speaks English, it's a chombo de Cologne, you know. And they will probably depend on us to help them more than looking at us with admiration, you know, hey, this guy speaks English beautiful, you know. Well, that's just an opinion again. Okay.
All right. Okay, have you lived outside of Panama, like abroad in another country ever?
Never, ever.
Okay.
Outside of Cologne, I've lived in Panama now in a capital city of Panama.
Uh-huh.
For more than 30 years.
Right.
I don't like being away from home. To me, home is Panama. Although, you know, my brother has residence in the United States, because as a retiree of the United States government and the closing of the Panama Canal, I mean, the turnover of the Panama Canal to Panama, the Americans gave us the option. Maybe because, you know, we have a United States check. Spend it over there, you know. So they gave us the option to go live in the United States with residence. My brother did so. He has residence in Houston. He's picked up his 7 kids. And they all went into the Army or Air Force or whatever. And he has a residence in Houston, but he goes back and forth. But I never used the option. I have a daughter that lives in Houston because she married a United States citizen, a Colombian, but United States resident. She's in Houston right now. Then my sister, my youngest sister, she, as I said before, we were all trained in English. And she graduated from the nun school in Cologne, St. Mary's Academy. And then she went to Puerto Rico to study English. She's a retired English teacher now in Puerto Rico. Then her daughters, 2 daughters and a son, they are Puerto Ricans, but of course, you know, they have United States citizenship. And they are in the States. My sister is still in Puerto Rico, and their grandchildren are in the States. I have a grandchild over there. So we're all connected one way or another in the United States. My brother has some of his children and grandchildren living in the United States. So you will see a lot of Balmacedas over in the United States right now. Yeah.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about family.
Okay.
Are you married, and how did you meet your wife?
That's a secret story. It's a secret story. Yes, I'm married. They threw me out. Can I say that? 30-something years ago, because I would say because of my popularity. Okay, I did get around. I did a lot of singing. I did a lot of newspaper. And I had 5 kids in my first marriage, and she didn't like the way I was popular, and you know, and she told me to leave. After she told me for the 100th times leave, I left. So I am living with the lady now for 30-something years. I have a child with her and brought 2 more, you know, and so forth. That's my family life, you know. But I like family life. I do get together most of the time, a lot of times with I was out, but then I was in, because I continued traveling to Cologne for several years, you know. And I'm still with them. I'm not physically with them, but I'm still with them. As a matter of fact, within the time I was over here, my kids were in a school in Cologne. Twice I was president of the PTA, you call it? PTA.
Mm-hmm.
And then nobody knew that I was not living with them, you know. So we carry a normal family life. I love family, you know. As a matter of fact, you mind I say, my eldest sister, this is a good story. I love this story. My eldest sister, who was also trained by Miss O'Connor, then she went to St. Mary's Academy. She met an American, Caucasian, and she married him in Cologne. He was in the army, and they left for the United States. The brief story about her is that she has had 6 children. She lives right now in Alaska. Unfortunately, her husband died 2 months ago. And about 20 years ago, more, 25, we all got a note from this lady in the United States. Her name is Lily Eskelson. And she says, "Dear Uncle Chichi, dear Uncle Lucho, dear," it's same letter, but individually addressed to each of us. "Dear Aunt Chachita, dear Aunt Nanita, my name is Lily Eskelson, and I am your niece." You know. So I went to Cologne one day and I saw the letter. Who is this? Oh, that's Chela's, our eldest sister, daughter. I wrote her. And since that letter, she has communicated with us. My sister came back to Panama after 50 years, visited Panama. Lily turns out to be, she was candidate for Congress in the United States. You know, so I am proud of my family, you know. And she came to Panama. And I told people about her. You know, I was boasting about my... And then they gave her VIP. She's very, very humble. She's a very, very humble person. But the Minister of Education, who was then from Cologne, you know, he's from Cologne, who was then Minister of Education, he told her, "Bring her over here," you know, and so forth. And they gave her VIP treatment here in Panama, free zone, whatever. They enjoyed their trip to Panama. She has been recently, I think 2-3 weeks ago, she was before treasurer, secretary treasurer of the National Educators Association, and she sings. That's the thing about her, Balmaceda. She sings beautiful. And then she has just been elected vice president of NEA. And she's on YouTube also. So this is family, huh? I'm proud that we're after all these years getting together. We write each other frequently, you know, we get in touch, you know, what's going on. As a matter of fact, I told her about this program also. Yes. She has declared herself from the Latin caucus, you say? You know, because you can go into YouTube and you can see her thanking for the election as vice president. I have my mother from Panama here with me. My mother is Panamanian. "¿Cómo están ustedes?" And she speaks in Spanish. Family. That's my family.
Very good. Okay. How would you characterize the cultural background of your wife? And also tell me a little bit more about your children's lives and their jobs. I mean, you have been in Cologne, you have a daughter here. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about wife and
okay, let's call them first wife and second wife. Okay? My first wife is Latin. I don't know exactly if she, I don't think she is West Indian descent, although her color is black. She is brown, dark brown, whatever. People tell me, and it had never been confirmed, that her father was Indian. You know, they never said it publicly, so I don't know how you're going to handle this information. Nobody ever said it publicly, but her mother, who died just recently, my first wife, she was dark-skinned. Yet the rest of the family, they are white people, you know, because her grandmother was Italian. You know, there's a mixture, as you know, Cologne is cosmopolitan. As you know, I am, who knows, I'm French, I am Nicaraguense, I am, who knows, I maybe have some German or something into me also. Discipline. Yeah, so that was my first wife. Then my first daughter was born dark skin. We're talking about, you know, what happens when you're dark skin and when you're light skin, because people look at that, you know. In Panama, a lot of people look at that. Then, as a matter of fact, all my kids, except one who is a lighter skin, that's one in the States, she's in the States, but though my kids are all right now, I try to do what my father did with us. You know, did a lot of sacrifice, put us through English school. I think I told you the first year or two that he sent us to school, he traded us. You know, I said, okay, I fix your typewriter and you educate my kids. Like when he could pay was $15, $20 a month, which is a lot of money, okay? But I try to do the same as my dad. So I put my kids in private schools that taught, listen to me now, they taught English. They were the foremost schools in Cologne where many people would send their children to learn English. There were Catholic schools, they are Catholic schools, which are Colegio, it was in English first, St. Mary's Academy, which is run by the St. Vincent Fathers, priests, and the Colegio La Salle, which is called La Salle today. But we knew it in our days at the Brothers School, which was all boys, and the other school, all girls. I've got two sisters that were graduated at the St. Mary's Academy. My eldest sister, who is in Alaska now, and my youngest sister, who is in Puerto Rico. Really involved in English, okay? And then I went from Kana School to Abe Bravo, which is a public school, high school. But then my kids, my son, my only one son in Cologne, I have four girls in Cologne, my one son, I sent him to La Salle to learn English. My daughters, I sent three of them to St. Mary's. And they never learned to speak English. That's why I say these schools, one time that was a school, if you want to learn English, you go to those schools. So afterward, my youngest daughter in Cologne, I sent her, because the schools turned out to be mixed afterwards. Instead of all boys, all girls, now they're mixed schools. So basically, I can say that my last daughter, she speaks English better, because the insistence of the English in the last 10 years, you know, you better learn English or you ain't going to go nowhere, okay? Practically, before the military regime ended, that's when it started, you know. Hey, you need to speak English. And more yet, in these last 7, 8 years, everything is call center. Everybody wants to work in a call center, so you better learn English, okay? So that's basically how my children are educated in Cologne. My one son, my boy, they said all the others are girls, he studied in the university. He got a technician, to be technician in electronics and so forth, put in his papers in a canal zone, and got a job with the United States government. Now Panama has a Panama Canal, and he works as a mechanic, and he's making good. He married a girl from Cologne, who she's a psychologist. Psychologist, yes. She studied in Mexico. So they're a good team. They made a good team. They're so good at it that they have only one child. One boy. Fortunately, there's another Jose Balmaceda in this world. They had one boy, that's it. No more. That's my opinion. I mean, he's in his 40s now. You know, and they're not thinking about kids anymore. They're bringing up this one who, as a matter of fact, is also a singer, my grandson. Well, they're making all right. They're doing all right in Cologne. My daughter in the United States, she's doing great. Then my one daughter, I raised three children over here. My second wife's two kids, and I have a daughter with her. She has been more dedicated because she admires my friendliness. She has told me that, you know, and the way I speak English, you know, with my friends. She doesn't speak, so to speak, fluently, but I educate her in IPA, which is an English teaching school. And they don't teach English as before. And the people tell me, IPA doesn't teach English as before. Then she's still studying. I think she's about 2 months away from a master's degree. But she's all right. She's still with us, and I don't know. She's probably planning to get married next year or so after she graduates, as she said. Okay, but I think I have wonderful kids. You know. The grandchildren are given some problems, but that's not mine. That's my kids' problems, okay? I try to give some advice, but things are really changing here in Panama. So that's family life as far as from me on, all right? I've already talked from before me, and now from me on, that's their story. Mm-hmm. I assist and I help as when I can, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, you told me you have family that lives in the U.S.,
yes.
Your brother and so forth.
Yes.
When they come to visit Panama, do other Panamanians see them as Panamanian or as American? Do they just come across as American? How do you think that works when they come over here?
My sister, my eldest sister that came back after 50 years, I think they look at her as an American. And then she speaks Spanish. She has kept up the practice of, she doesn't speak Spanish fluently, but she speaks okay, sounds okay, and people look at her as an American. I mean, it's over 50 years, you know, she's been over there. Just like my niece, when she came to Panama, I've had two nieces and one of my sister's grandchild, they came to Panama, they're looked upon as American. Otherwise, my brother's kids who live in the United States, there are five or six of them living over there. They are coming back and forth. When they come over here, they're Panamanians. They come back as Panamanians with the same, you know, style, Panamanian style, craziness.
Okay. Good. Okay. Now we're almost at the end. What specific message do you want to communicate to the younger people of Panama? Whether it's the West Indian community, younger people, or just people that you grew up around, or the younger people.
That's a tough question, because I said it a few minutes ago, that we're in different worlds. My world is not the world that you kids are living in today. And I want to believe that there should be a political... Everything has happened because of the way the country has been run. And not only Panama, I mean the world. Yesterday I was talking with a friend of mine from Colón. I think I told you about him. His name is another descent, okay? Javier Lewis. And we were talking about what would be the best thing for Panama. Again, considering that we are from a different world, you know. We were in Panama, but what's happening today, totally different. And I had thought, you know, we went through a military regime, and I am surrounded by kids in the things that I do. I sing with the church choir, and most of these kids are between their ages of 18 and 35, maybe. 80% of the kids. We have a choir of about 50 voices. And just 4 days ago, they were asking me about Colón. You know, and I told them, this is a different world. This is why your question is so up to, you know, related to what I've been talking about lately. That you guys are in a different world. The only thing you know about, and your parents maybe, is the military government. And now that the military, it does not exist here, I thought something was going to happen different, something new, something productive was going to happen after the fall of the military in 1989 when the United States invaded us. But things, I think, have gone to worse. And my feeling, as I told my friend Lewis yesterday, my feeling, and I don't think a lot of people agree with me, is that we need it. Our people nowadays need to be run militarily, with somebody in strict, somebody, you know. And then we spoke about our teachers. Mr. Lewis and myself, we spoke about why are we this way, you know. I mean, we're not perfect, but we live with respect, we live with consideration, because we had teachers. Like, there was a guy came in from Spain, as a matter of fact, running from the military regime in Spain. But this man was military himself. His name was, he died at the age of 94, 95, a couple of years ago, Inés Sánchez Balibrea. And because of his discipline, military, you better look up to that guy when he talks to you, not answering back, huh? And because of that one man, he gave the example of how to handle the school affairs, and that's where everything comes from. How you were trained at home, my opinion, how you were trained at school. So I wouldn't even know what to say to my own kids, you know, because they all admire the way I'm a singer, the way people clap at me and so forth, you know, but they're looking probably at my popularity. You know, and when I brought them up, they better respect me, you know. I had a heart, I didn't have a whip in my hand, You know, but they respected me, and even though I didn't live with most of them in Colombia, okay, the eldest was 12 years old when I came back over to Panama. I said I never missed them. I was always there for them. But they, I don't know if it was fear, I don't know, whatever it was, I got that from school. I got that from that man, Inés Sánchez Balibrea. Because I think you need the discipline. You need somebody with a strong, firm hand to be honest to begin with. So I don't know what to say to the kids nowadays. I would say Panama, in our people, we need somebody with a stronger hand running the country. And I'm not saying with guns. Not necessarily. I remember once, as I said, I have a lot of stories. I remember once on a job, and in this, we spoke before of our influence from the Americans. When I started to work as an inspector, as I said, I was the third Panamanian that got a job as an inspector for the United States Army in Panama, you know, and then I didn't even have a college degree. The first two were architects, graduate architects, and maybe my English and my nice drawing and so forth. They gave me this job, so I went out there and I said, okay, I'm going to do my job. So what's my job? Read specs and go out and see that the contractor does what he has to do. My first contract was a paint contract. This is interesting. My first contract was interior painting. And I was on a job. There were about five or six apartments that I would find the time to go to each of the apartments, take a good look, and if I see a mistake, I will order them to correct it immediately. About a month afterwards, the contractor came into the office. The boss was an American, Southerner, Canalzonian. I know people will understand when I say a Canalzonian. And the boss, the contractor, a Spanish guy, came in and said, "Mr. Inspector, Mr. Boss," I won't even mention his name, "now I have a good inspector. Now I have a good inspector. This man is on the job every day. And the other guy you had there before, another Panamanian, he never came on the job. He would come on the job when the last day, and he would give me a list of 50 exceptions that would take me two men, one or two extra days, and that's money. Now this man is correcting me day by day, so on the last day of the contract painting, I just have to clean up and leave. So I'm saving money because of the efficiency of your inspector." And this chief of inspectors said, "You get out of my office." He chased him out and he closed the door. He locked the door and he said, "Mama said, I have to talk to you." They used to call it bad words, so if I say anything that's out of turn, you know what I'm doing. He said, "I want to talk to you. I don't want any goddamn contractor coming in here and say I have good inspectors." Now, this thing is in my mind since the day. I don't want no contractor coming in here and saying that I have good inspectors. They gotta fear you. So listen to these words. Put the fear of God into them and they will respect you. That's so true. That's so true for the general public. People are handled with fear. And we can see all over the world. You know, and I have another incident. I mean, I'm getting philosophical, but that's life, okay? I always remember that gringo says, put the fear of God into them and they will respect you. And I don't believe in that. I think I can get respect by being a person, you know, giving love. That's our Catholic training. That comes from the church. And then again, I always remember this other thing, you know. I have it written down somewhere in my memories. When I graduated from Abel Brau, I got me second place in French. And they gave me a bronze medal, second place in French, with my name on the back, Jose Balmaceda, but engraved. And then the medal itself was alto relieve. How do you say it in English? Well, it had a wolf standing on top of a lamb, and it's back against the floor, you know, its legs spread, and the wolf was on top of this lamb, and they had an engraving there in French that says, la raison du plus fort c'est toujours la meilleure. That means the strongest is always right. You know, and I said, hey, and I just realized that after 35 years. Yes, after 35 years, I really looked at that medal. I have it at home. I'm going to give it to my kids one of these days. To the smartest, you know. They're all smart. It's kind of difficult to pick one of them out and say, you're the smartest. And it says, the strongest always is right, you know. La razón del más fuerte es siempre la mejor. And I said, you know, who's giving me this thing, you know? The people who were the fraternité and the égalité, and you know, where democracy began, France. And they're giving me a medal saying that, hey, you better listen to the strongest. Just like what this gringo told me, put the fear of God into them and they will respect you. So what are we talking about in our world? You know, this is not new. This has come from the maybe age, day one when this world exists. There is always the strongest, and the guy that can put a gun to your head, you're scared, you know. They scare you. They can rob you. So we come down to the point again, what kind of suggestions can I make to people, or just to the kids, you know, be strong. But I would prefer to say be strong intellectually. Be strong in education. Be wise, be friendly, and try to get along with people. Because the strongest people are always on top of you. Just like that wolf on top of the lamb. If they're stronger economically, if they're stronger physically, just like our games in Beijing, who's the strongest? You know, the guy that won the event in swimming, he's the strongest. You know, he's the best. We're putting a label on him now, the best. You know. Or record, whatever, and we go with it because we're living in a world that's the way our world is. Who's going to change this? I don't know. Jesus Christ, the Bible says he came down to change the world, you know. He gave us 10 commandments, but we're not following the commandments. That's it.
Alright. Well, what community groups or organization are you involved with? I know you're in the church choir.
I'm in the church choir. That's right.
Anything else?
Right now, no. But all my life has been part of community activities. I've been in different Colón as a kid, you know, I organize sports leagues, you know. If I start, I don't know if I can remember, I was president, for instance, then as a president of the athletic league, I organized and was president of the major league for softball in Colón for about 5 years. In school, I was president of the my graduating class. Not to speak of Miss O'Connor. Miss O'Connor, I was leading everything, you know. And I that was always my thing, you know. I tell my kids I hate people who are mediocre. In Spanish, I tell them, of course, I speak with them in Spanish. Yo odio la mediocridad. No te estoy diciendo que sea el mejor, pero no sea mediocre. That's my belief in life, you know. And everything I've done, I've always wanted to be in the group, in the strong groups, you know.
What about the writing or the sport writers?
Oh, sport writing, I did that for about 20 years, and that was for free, you know, just trying to give my community, not my community only, but my school, when I was in Abel Bravo. You know, I got into sports, I got into a league there with as a baseball scorer. And I noticed, and then I like to be, you know, tops. I like to do things that are attracted, you know, to people or whatever. And then I did the baseball scoring, and after 1 week I realized nobody was publishing anything in the papers about this league. And now this was the major league of baseball in Colón. And it wasn't professional, it was all amateur league, okay? So I wrote a letter to the papers, and they published it in big letters and so forth, and that's where a newspaper sports writer was born, so to speak, you know. And I did that for 20 years. And in every sport that you can think of in Colón, and I even got involved in that. And then we had a sports writers association. I was secretary for about 20 years, and I got to be president and treasurer, you know. I had to be one of the leaders, you know. That has been my life, you know. But now I'm just kind of taking it easy, because my big thing is singing.
Is there any other information you want to include that we have not talked about?
I can't think of anything, because I think I've gone through a lot of my life, you know. I've had a beautiful life. Like I said, friendship. Maybe the one thing that I would want to stress on is friendship, you know. Because it's difficult for a man of 70-something years to sing a song, and then you have an 18-year-old, a 17-year-old coming up and asking you for an autograph, you know. It's probably when you reach my age, have known people 40 years, 50 years, they're looking for recognition. And it's true, you know. I talk about wanting to be everything first, you know, our leaders and so forth. I remember when I, about 35 years ago, I went to this retiro, what do you say in English?
A retreat
with the church, okay? I was in Colón then. And I was a draftsman from one of these architects, and he told me, hey, we're going to have a retreat over the weekend. I said, okay. So we came over to Panama, in a special place, well separated from the crowd and so forth. There were about 50 men, you know, and we talked about Jesus Christ, and we talked about the quality of life, and we talked about whatever. Well, you know what church things do, huh? As a matter of fact, we had a group there say, okay, Batma said, what are you going to do? You're going to be the newspaper man. You know, we had a newspaper for the 4 days that we were there with my printing and so forth. I excelled it. I was good. And I was. But, you know, the Catholic Church, we confess. Everybody had confessed except Batma said that. So that last day, the person that was the chief, what word can you say? He was the leader then, whatever. Was Monsignor, one of these bishops, you know, a young bishop. And I said, hey, Monsignor, I want to confess. Said, all right. That was the last. Everybody had confessed since day two, you know, and this was day four. And he said, let's walk out. And it was a man-to-man talk, you know. It was a nice garden and so forth. We walked out and said, all right, so what do you want to confess? I say, I want to be more humble. Now, these are important points in my life, huh? I don't remember too many things, but these things I remember. I want to be more humble. What do you mean by more humble? I don't know. Everything I get into, I want to be leader, I want to be president, I want to be treasurer, I want to be secretary, I want to be... I never thought of notice, now that I say that. And not that I want to be noticed. I want to do things. I want to tell people, hey, I can do it better, you know. And I want to be... we spoke in Spanish. Quiero ser más humilde. And he answered me in Spanish, humilde por qué? And I told him, and I want to be first, and I want to be, and I want to be president, and I want to be. And you know, in Spanish, it's very, it sounded off, and I mean, anybody can understand. So no seas tan pendejo. I reacted to that. Don't be an idiot. I said, what do you mean? I said, if you have all this talent, God gave it to you. And He gave it to you to use it, not to hide it. And these have been my teachings in life. I mean, just a sentence made me think. And as I said, I'm very philosophical. Okay? I had a great philosopher teacher in Cologne. His name was Rufo Garay. You know, his name is in a... He died young. And his name is in a school in Cologne. Rufo Garay. And he taught us philosophy. And I'm very Socratic, okay? And those things... It stayed in my mind. No sea tan pendejo. And a priest was telling me this, you know. If God gave you this talent, use it. Don't abuse it, you know, so to speak. Use it. If you're going to use it to benefit other people, to benefit your family, to benefit your friends, use it. This is a God-given thing, okay? So I'm not thinking I'm the best in the world, but you know, okay. Within the modesty, I will say that I'm good, you know. Well, I think that's the only other thing that I could think of, you know, because I can tell stories when I get sparked off with a question, you know, but so that's it.
All right.
And as Professor Trim would say, thank you for the interview.
Well, thank you for participating, and feel free to contact us if you ever want to add anything or...
Okay.
Make any suggestions. I know we'll be in touch.
All right. Okay. Okay.